Hi, welcome to the Telegram. I'm Tim Stanley, and you're joining us today live on the interweb. This is a Google Hangout. You are literally hanging with Tim Stanley. I'm joined today by Benedict Brogan. Hello, how are you?
Hanging with you.
You're hanging with me. Okay, it's so cool. And we're going to be talking today about Europe, and particularly the Tories' problem with it. But first of all, just to set up something to give you some sense of how this is all working, you can tweet at us. It's called hashtag hangwithtim. Feel free to send us loads of comments. We're going to have a little chat between me and Ben first. Then we're going to talk to Louise Mensch, who's in New York, and Dominic Raab, who's in London. But first of all, Ben, I want to talk to you about the story which everyone's talking about today, which is God and the Prime Minister. There it is on the front page. So what has Cameron done? What's he done now?
Cameron has talked about God, which Prime Ministers are perhaps not supposed to do, at least according to Alistair Campbell.
Right.
But he's talked about God, and he's talked about God for the latest. He's done it before. He's getting into a habit about talking about God and talking about his faith and his religion. And he said that Christians should be more evangelical.
That's a very loaded word.
A lot of people will find it slightly unnerving.
Right, okay. Do you think he meant it that way?
I think he meant that he wants Christians to be more muscular rather than secular. I'm not sure he was getting into the divisions within the wider Protestant community between evangelicals and high church Anglicans. But I think he was certainly seeking to be provocative.
Okay, now we know he's always had a strong faith, and it's something which he's spoken about helping him when his son died.
Yeah, although he said before that his faith wasn't very
right,
strong.
That it came,
I think,
and
that's
went,
why people were slightly
like
surprised.
Magic FM. Right, okay, exactly. But do you think there's a particular timing here? There's a political timing to this evangelical push?
Well, because we're all cynics and we're all trained now to think that everything politicians do at any time is suspicious, then it might be tempting to think that the fact that he's chosen to talk about God is timed specifically because it's Easter weekend,
right?
Obviously. But more seriously, he's got an issue with he's being undermined from the right by UKIP, and UKIP is presenting an argument that suggests that Britain's traditions, Britain's culture is being undermined in some way by immigration. So people might read into what the Prime Minister is talking about as a way of consolidating his position, shoring up his right flank against UKIP. It might also be seen as an answer to the various bishops and church leaders who have piled into him in recent months, effectively saying that the government is squeezing faith out of the public square.
Okay, well, that brings us on very nicely to the subject du jour, the subject of Europe, which we're going to be talking about now. So here's the problem. The Tories have done some pretty good things. They've got the debt down. No, they haven't got the debt down. They've got the deficit down, so they say. Okay, that's another subject. But they are tackling spending. Let's be as vague as possible. They say they've got immigration under control. The economy's growing. That's the important thing. Most of the polls show that people blame Labour for the trouble we're in, not the Tories. Things are getting tighter, yet the May elections are approaching, and it could well be that the Tories come in third place, Labour second, and UKIP first. So what we want to talk about right now is we're going to talk to some top Tories about what's going wrong for their party. And the first person I want to bring in is Dominic Raab, an MP who is in London. Dominic, are you there with us?
I'm here, in Thames Ditton, actually.
Oh, good, great. You're where?
Thames Ditton.
Okay, great. Well, I can see you on our screen. Dominic, so Tories, despite all that they've accomplished, let's not waste time talking about how great they are. Why might they place third in these elections? What's going wrong for the Prime Minister?
Well, I think there's a broader issue around the European elections and whether this is a vehicle for disaffected voters in general to put two fingers up at the political class. But, you know, actually, if I look at, I don't spend my whole time looking at polls, but the latest YouGov poll has us 3 points behind Labour. So in terms of the big picture and where we look at the trajectory between now and 2015, I don't think we're in a bad place. You talked about the good economic news. We've got to try and make sure, I think, that however well or badly UKIP do and the Tories do, that actually it's their high point and we keep hammering our message on
right.
The
But come on, the European elections do matter, because if UKIP does do very, very well, then that's going to give the momentum going into 2015. And we all know they only have to win a certain percent to deny you guys seats, which could mean that you end up losing the election despite all the great things you've done.
Yeah. I tell you what, I think the biggest risk for the Conservatives is having not got our boundary changes through. We need to be so far ahead in the polls to get a majority. But UKIP are going to do well, and protest parties are going to do well across Europe. I'm not denying that. We could talk about European policy, but actually, I think that from the Bloomberg speech onwards, Conservatives have been a pretty good place. And ironically, I think the Farage-Clegg debates rather opened that door for us to take this renegotiation policy and mop up a lot of support around that, as long as we can make sure it's credible. But there is huge malaise around politics and politicians in general. UKIP have been very adept at feeding off it, although, of course, in recent days, we've seen Farage come under fire for his expenses, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
We will touch upon that. Louise Mensch, if I can bring you in. You're in New York right now. Thank you so much for being with us. It's very
no
kind
problem.
Tell us what your analysis is. That was a little more positive from Dominic, but come on, if UKIP do as well as we think they're going to do, that's bad for the Tories, right?
Depends on whose expense, doesn't it? If I see the Liberal Democrats wiped out in these elections, I shall be quietly opening the champagne, and I think that will have a more important knock-on effect in the general election than UKIP doing well in the Euros, which is effectively already priced into the political market. In fact, the Conservatives are in quite a good strategic position because everybody believes UKIP's going to do absolutely fantastically. They've done terrible expectations management. They have nowhere to go but down. If UKIP fail to do anything other than utterly sweep the board, they become a bit of a busted flush. And if they do sweep the board, and they will hurt some Tories, that would be a bad thing. They're more likely to hurt the Liberal Democrats. Then I think people will start looking at Conservative Lib Dem marginals, how well the Tories are going to do in the southwest of England in the general election.
And how does a UKIP sweep help the Lib Dems?
No, it doesn't.
At whose
expense will UKIP sweep, I ask you? If the story of the Euros is not so much UKIP have done well because we're all expecting that, but that the Lib Dems totally collapse.
Right,
and my
right.
view is that will be the bigger story because the Lib Dems, unlike UKIP, are a national party with 60 members of parliament. If the Lib Dems totally collapse, I think that will be the story of the Euros, not the rise of UKIP, which everybody's expecting. One of the few benefits of no longer being an MP is that you can say things that the whips didn't allow you to say before. And so one of the things I can say now is that the European elections totally and utterly don't matter.
Right.
And there's not an MP in Westminster that thinks they matter. Look at Dominic smiling. He knows I'm right.
You weren't allowed to say before. Will you at least give us an honest explanation of why the Tory promise of a referendum has not killed UKIP stone dead? Because that's what it should have done.
No, I don't agree. I think UKIP now are partly where the Lib Dems were before. I mean, let's try and play the game of naming a UKIP policy. When Farage was shown his own manifesto, even he couldn't name a UKIP policy. They are a protest vote. They are the none of the above vote. The Lib Dems lost that the moment they went into coalition with one side or the other. You're always going to have a protest vote, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going back to the Tories.
UKIP do have some policies I can name, particularly getting us out of Europe, and people seem to like it. Ben, can I bring you in at this moment?
Yes, I'm just curious to ask Dominic, what do you think is the main obstacle to the Tories doing well at the moment? Why is it, given that the economy is going gangbusters, everybody is happy, David Cameron seems to be performing well, the wind seems to be in the Tory sails, the polls are still consistently against you, and a lot of your colleagues still feel incredibly depressed about the prospects, not at the Euro elections, I agree with Louise, they're completely neither here nor there, but the prospects for next year. What is the obstacle to success?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm not sure about the polls. As I said, I didn't spend my whole time looking at them. The latest YouGov has 3 points behind. That's actually a pretty promising position to be in. I think the challenges from here on in are making sure that the sort of raw data on the economy translates into a feel-good factor right across the country. I did Question Time in Warrington recently. It's a very different feel from London and the South East, so that's important. I think making sure we keep our promises and a whole string of reforms, whether it's welfare, immigration, schools reform. I don't think that the European issue is important. I've talked about it, debated about it a lot, but it's not even for UKIP voters the single most important thing. I think we face an uphill challenge which has been made steeper by the failure to get the boundary changes through. And I think there was one issue that I think we do need to do better on. It's appealing to the working class, Tory voters, that Thatcher is so great at lapping up, whether it's through the consumer agenda or things like energy bills and having a very clear or positive view about how we improve the position for consumers rather than Miliband's clunky top-down approach. right the way through to things like young apprenticeships to 14, 16-year-olds, and making sure that that working-class voter and family understands not just that the Tories speak their kind of language, but what's in it for them. So if you want something positive that I think we could do more of, that would be it.
Okay, but Dominic, what happens if you do get hammered in these elections? What happens then to the backbenchers? What is the Tory party inside Parliament going to be thinking if the Tories do place third?
So in my view, we've got to make sure we keep our nerve. That stands for the leadership, the parliamentary party and the voluntary party. I think the very worst thing we could do was have a knee-jerk reaction. That would only accentuate the sense that Farage is leading the debate. I think what we've got to keep doing is plugging away with the bread and butter things that people care about. I do think the European issue is important. So, for example, strengthening our narrative on what renegotiation looks like. The crime and policing opt out is a good opportunity to do that. But the worst thing for us to do is to have a fit of the collective vapors, because actually that would just be reaffirming Farage's measure. And I think he will come under more and more scrutiny. Everyone keeps talking about Europe and whether he can deliver. If you vote Farage, do you get Miliband? I would be looking at spending commitments. He makes, frankly, he makes Miliband look thrifty if you count them all up.
Yeah, Ben.
But Louise, why do you think the Tories aren't doing better than they think you think they should be, given how well everything seems to be going with the economy?
I think they're doing fine, but I agree with something that Dominic put his finger on early in the discussion, which is the one really big mistake the Prime Minister has made in this Parliament is not absolutely insisting on the boundary changes, which we delivered our end of the bargain on through the AV referendum. I cannot understand why we have allowed the Liberal Democrats to remain in coalition with us when they didn't deliver the boundary changes.
Well, hang on a second.
It's such a structural unfairness that, you know, it's almost impossible to win the election without them. And yeah.
Both you and Dominic have talked about the boundary changes, but surely, unless I've completely forgotten my history, it was a Tory revolt against the boundary changes, and particularly Lords Reform. It was the Tory revolt against Lords Reform that stopped the boundary changes, surely.
Lords Reform was never part of the boundary change package, ever. The boundary change package was a simple exchange. We give you an AV referendum, you give us boundary changes, that's it. Now, I was... may surprise some people to learn that I was one of the rebels in the Lords Amendments. I was the only vote on which I've ever rebelled against the government. I wasn't about to see Nick Clegg's inane plan for 15-year terms and no accountability go through. I didn't go into Parliament to commit constitutional vandalism. But at no stage during that vote or at the run-up to that vote, and Dominic will back me up here, were the rebels told, this is it or boundary changes. That came after the vote entirely. And we made the biggest strategic error of our political lives when we allowed Nick Clegg to get away with that. And if I were Linton and George, I would be looking to do something reasonably big and get boundary changes back through. I'd be looking to give Clegg more or less anything he wants, a little slice of AV on local elections, for example, or even PR on council elections in order to get boundary changes back.
I know you don't want to see a right-wing reaction against UKIP doing well either, but isn't it necessary sometimes in politics to acknowledge that you have a problem, particularly if it's with the very base voters that you need? Now, regardless of how well the Tories are doing on the economy, there have been a number of issues, gay marriage, green policy, where ordinary Conservative voters feel that you guys are out of touch. And wouldn't it just be rational to acknowledge that after a drumming in the polls and adjust your policy accordingly?
Well, I think, if I'm going to be particularly Pollyanna-ish about it, that speaking as a Eurosceptic, but not a better off outer, I think there's a big UKIP victory and a crush for the Lib Dems, which, as I say, I think it's the Lib Dems that will be the story after the Euros and not UKIP, the fall of them. I think that could benefit the Conservative Party because it will strengthen the moderate right. A big UKIP will strengthen the argument of the moderate right that we have to go into these European renegotiations with a clear list that we can sell to the voters. We can't be wishy-washy about what we want back. It's going to have to be... Cameron's always surprised, and surprised well, when he's gone to Brussels, just as when he used his veto. He's got to come up with a referendum renegotiation list that voters are going to say, yes, that's exactly what I want. And it will strengthen those on the right that say he must, the right of the Tory party, that say we've got to give that clear list that voters will buy into and that ex-UKIP voters will buy into. And I think that is going to have positive effects for the Conservatives in the general election, if that's the way that it goes.
Okay, thank you. Dominic Raab, even when things were going well, people were saying, bring Boris back into Parliament. If things don't go so well, that's not going to go away, is it? There's still a fundamental unease with David Cameron's leadership. You yourself personally have rebelled on some votes. I know not as a personal thing, as a principled thing, but there are tensions in the Tory party, and it's only going to get worse after this round of elections.
Actually, I've never voted against the government on any major vote. I've rebelled about a handful of times, less than 1%. I've always said very clearly, you know, I went into politics a bit like Louise to stand up for what I believe in, and we should have open debate about these issues. But I've never for a second doubted that David Cameron is doing a great job in very tough both financial and political situation, but also is the right guy to lead us into the next election. No doubt in my mind. Frankly, I think that debate is passed. Boris would be a great asset to the team, but he's got to work out how he balances that with his commitment to be Mayor of London. That's for him to decide. But I don't think, you know, frankly, the tittle-tattle about leadership, which always gets resurrected, and you can expect to hear some rumblings about it post-European elections. I've always felt it was media tittle-tattle magnified well beyond what I see day-to-day in Parliament.
Okay. Yeah, can I come in on Boris, Tim, because I think there's something important to say vis-a-vis UKIP, and it's good that it's got out to Telegraph readers. Boris Johnson is a massive, indeed epic, Europhile. There is precisely zero chance that Boris Johnson, who voted for Ken Clark in the leadership race, who is an on-the-record lover of Europe in a way that we've rarely seen since the days of Michael Heseltine, is ever going to lead my former colleagues in the parliamentary party. And it's something that does not come up enough. Look at Dominic smiling. It's something that does not come up enough when we discuss the Boris Johnson issue. There is no way on God's green earth that a Europhile, an open Europhile, and he's been clever to camouflage it in things like I want a referendum, and then he goes, but I will campaign to stay in. Of course he will. When people start looking at his record at the Financial Times, his massive Europhilia, which can be attested by any number of lobby journalists, there is no chance at all that Boris Johnson will ever lead the Conservative Party because he is a raging Clarkite Europhile, the end.
Dominic, do you agree? Do you think that kills Boris, really, the fact that he's actually much more enthusiastic about Europe than he might let on?
I haven't followed it in the level of detail that Louise has, so I'm being enlightened as we speak. Look, I think all this stuff about leadership needs to wait until the time at which there's a vacancy. I frankly, it's interesting, people, journalists ask me about this, I never spend any time wondering about the next leadership context, because frankly that's a massive distraction. There are lots of incremental things that we need to do, and that's boring for journalists because it's not kind of newsworthy, but actually building on the recovery, making sure that we hit our immigration target, that's quite important. Welfare reform, reaching out to the working class, so these are things I spend my time working on. Making sure, I think as well, our party looks like a meritocratic party, sounds like a meritocratic party. That's as much about policy as perception, I think, and making sure there's lots on that in the next election. But all this stuff about leadership, honestly, leaves me cold.
Okay, yeah. But if we can talk about one other leader then, we're winding down now. Nigel Farage. Now, despite all his problems with the expenses, despite all the issues of his party flip-flopping, all the crazy militants that you can find within UKIP, nonetheless, it seems impossible to dent his poll standing. Louise, why do you think people stay with this man, even when other politicians have been accused of the kind of thing that he's been accused of, and they walk away from them? What is it about Nigel Farage that, love him or loathe him, people will not give up on him?
Well, because there is a certain... There is a splinter group in the country, a small but not insignificant group, that wants to leave the European Union at any price, and they don't care about economics or whatever, they hate the EU and they want out. Period, the end. Okay, they're going to vote for UKIP, whether he takes his money and trousers it and spends it on red elephants and, you know, wibble wibble, I'm a hat stand, they don't care because they want to leave the EU. Simple as. Some of those people, not all of them, I don't mean to malign them, but there is a crossover group with people who hate the idea of equal marriage and who therefore blame the Conservatives for bringing it in. And that's fine, that's politics. People have got a right to do that. But mainly, there's always got to be a party that is a receptor for the none of the above vote. There's got to be one. It used to be the Liberal Democrats, and people were voting Lib Dem who couldn't tell you a single Lib Dem party. They were just the not Labour, not Tories party. Now the Lib Dems are in coalition, and people have seen what they're like in government, ineffective, weak, and a break on the Conservatives, the none-of-the-above party is UKIP. And you can never get rid of the none-of-the-above vote. That said, I'm holding my fire on Farage's expenses because I don't give a monkeys about the Euros. They don't matter at all. I'm going to have a good, long, hard look at the sun at Farage's expenses in between the Euros and the general election because that's when I think it will count. Right now, any mention of the word UKIP reminds voters that there's an unimportant European election on. And if they want to send a message to Cameron, be strong on Europe, they might do it with a vote for UKIP.
Dominic Raab, are you familiar with UKIP in your own constituency? Is this something you've had to deal with? Have you known Conservative constituency party members who've defected?
Oh, sure. And for me, the way I see it, UKIP feeds on a whole range of issues, but most of all, the idea of broken promises. And of course, in the wake of the expenses scandal, that gave them a real shot in the arm, not just the protest party, but the idea that actually the political class as a whole can't be trusted. If there's one thing we've got to do is make sure, you know, we're in a totally different position from UKIP, we're not a protest party, we're actually in office. We've got to make sure we deliver on the promises in a very forum, patient, fastidious way. If we can do that and at the same time hold Farage's feet to the fire, without personal attacks, frankly, I thought some of that has been a bit mistaken and misplaced in the past, but by looking at what the consequence of voting Farage, and indeed what they're saying in their policies and their manifesto, if we do those two things in a patient, steady, cool-headed way, I think actually European elections may be the high point for Farage and UKIP, and actually we'll find ourselves in a much stronger position by 2015.
Ben, final
so
point.
So you think in the end that Nigel Farage will cease to be a problem after the European elections? Do you both think that UKIP is going to collapse a bit like a souffle and will not signify next year?
Have they ever elected an MP? Have they ever been significant outside of the European elections? The answer is no. They are a one-election party, the Euros. That's it. That's never changed.
Well, in local elections in Boston.
What? In local elections in Boston? I don't mean to laugh or no disrespect to the good voters of Boston. But saying, you know, oh, we swept the parish council and Little Middleton under March, you know, doesn't mean very much. Come back to me when you've got the remotest prospect of winning one MP anywhere ever. Farage has stood for Parliament a number of times and he has always not just lost, but lost disastrously. They're just not a national party. They're a European elections party. That's it and that's all.
I think the other thing...
And Louise mentioned Dominic Raab. We're winding down there. Thank you both very much for coming. Thank you so much for being with us today. I just make it very clear here that we, the Telegraph, think Boston's a wonderful place. We think it's
so
a very, very good... It really is. It's the heart and soul of Britain. I just want to close by bringing you in on this Nigel Farage thing and why it is you think that he survives. Let me very quickly read out a couple of tweets, mostly positive stuff about Nigel Farage. A lot of UKIP people joining in here. Just answer one person's question. Yes, the hair is real.
anybody asked why you're not wearing a tie, though?
No one's asked about that. People don't wear ties anymore. It's the 21st century now. Michael Shaw says, the Tories are promising a referendum on Europe and are actually in a position to deliver it. Why does UKIP still exist? But senior skeptic says, all colours of voters are moving to UKIP because they speak straightforwardly and appeal to the left behind. Is that Nigel Farage's appeal, that people look at him and they see someone who's not like ordinary politicians, a bit more like them, that's what they want?
Well, Nigel Farage trades on the idea that he is not like ordinary politicians, that he is not one of them. Of course, Nigel Farage is one of them because he is a professional politician. He trousers his allowances from Europe. He is basically somebody who lives and breathes in politics and depends on politics. He is a politician. But he's found a voice and a way of speaking that exempts him from a lot of the rules of politics. And I think one of the things that has been striking about the Times' efforts to do him in over his allowances that he is claiming from the European Union is that none of it seems to be sticking for the time being.
Yeah.
He seems to have that Boris Johnson quality that scandals just don't affect him because they are already priced into the market. But I suspect, though, that as the scrutiny intensifies and as UKIP gets the pressure that you expect it to get if it wants to be taken seriously as a party, then that might not last.
There's an interesting comparison with Boris Johnson to be made there. I mean, he came up a lot in the discussion today. There is a guy who I didn't realize he was Europhile, but seems to have gotten away with appearing Eurosceptic. There's something about those particular personalities, is because it's about the personality and the figure, the policies don't really matter so much. Everyone keeps on talking about what's Nigel Farage's position on X, Y, Z. I don't think people care. They're voting for a...
No, people make judgments about the person as a politician, as a potential statesman, as whether or not they are compelling, whether or not they have beliefs, whether they talk from the gut and the heart. And I suspect that people listen to Nigel Farage and feel that he does.
Okay, final question. In your opinion, how do you think the May elections are going to play out?
I think the May elections won't be great for the Tories. It wouldn't surprise me if UKIP did not do as well as it's expected. I think Louise was absolutely right. UKIP has very badly managed expectations for the European elections. Anything short of first place would be a disaster for them. But that said, I think the Tories will do badly. But the point about the European elections is there'll be a kerfuffle afterwards. Dominic is right. There'll be a bit of leadership speculation around David Cameron. And then we'll move on to the next thing. And the question is whether UKIP manages to carry through any of its successes in May into the rest of the year and into next year. I'm not entirely convinced they will.
Well, Benedict Brogan, thank you very much. And thank you all for joining us. Thank you for hanging out with Tim. Do make sure you check out the Telegram online, look at all our other podcasts, and do visit the Telegraph, best newspaper in the world. And I hope you all have a very happy Easter.